Hey guys, it's Bits here. Before we get into our first episode recapping season 10, we have a huge announcement. Get excited. As we jump previous seasons, we have an amazing guest roster coming up for this recap in the lead up to season 22, presumably later this spring. Starting with none other than Ms. Brooke Williamson, who we will have on this coming Monday, January 6th. We had an amazing interview with her. We talked all about her new cookbook, her time on Top Chef. We were giddy the whole time, a bit starstruck. But please tune in. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be okay, without further ado, let's get to our season 10, episode 1.
Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we're back, baby.
We're back. Top Chef is back 14 years ago, whatever. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. But we're back, Nancy. I'm so happy to be back to
Top Chef.
Our true form. Back in our lizard skin.
I know that we weren't gone for long from your ears because we just covered Great British Bake Off. And if you haven't listened to our GBBO season, highly recommend some of our funniest and weirdest commentary to date, I would say.
I would agree.
Because we were kind of no holds barred. But we've returned to our roots because Netflix, it's a Christmas miracle.
We're home for the holidays.
It's a miracle. Netflix has blessed us with a new season, season 10 of Top Chef on our streaming platforms.
Ah! Oh my God.
So while you were away, while we were away from Top Chef, there was some hubbub on Reddit about how Peacock removed a bunch of seasons. Everyone's in a tizzy, but we are grateful to the Netflix gods because we have season 10, Kristen Kish's season.
Brooke Williamson's season,
first season. Like heavy hitters in this season.
Oh my God.
Nancy. Sheldon's in here. It's so good.
We have to just, let's get this moving because like I'm bursting. Okay. Wow. As folks know, so season 10, episode 1, if you've been listening to us for any period of time, you know that we do some fun predictions. We do some food counters. We're going to hold off on doing that stuff for the first episode this time, just because this was a very unique episode 1, which we'll talk about. But if you're expecting that, tune in
next week.
Episode 2. Yeah.
Okay. So for just some scene setting, season 10 is set in Seattle. Which at the time, that time being the years 2012 to 2013. So like we were in college for this. Like we were of age.
Yeah.
It's just like an interesting moment. I think Seattle was really having its renaissance. You've got Microsoft, Amazon, you know, just the tech boom happening out west. And with tech boom and tech bros comes obnoxious food experiences and fine dining. So
no correlation without causation or whatever.
So Seattle's on the map, but we do not start in Seattle, do we, Bits?
We don't. We start all over the map, Nancy, and that is why I love this. This might be the best episode 1 of any Top Chef season.
Yeah, it's epic and it's just like action-packed.
Oh my God, it's so good, dude. It is so good. I feel like it, I don't know if you watched American Idol when you were a kid, but it was
I was just thinking that.
And they're like, okay, now we go to Las Vegas. Like, now we go to Philadelphia. And you're like, ooh, who are they going to find? I mean, it's a little different because they're sending these people to these places, but okay. Before we dive in, is it too early to – let me ask you this, Nancy. What – you kind of alluded to it. We were in college when this season first premiered. Tell me a little bit more about your relationship to this season.
Thank you so much for asking. So streaming was like not – the streaming as we know it now was not a thing when we were in college. Like Netflix had Netflix, quote, on demand. I remember it was called.
I remember my aunt would get like the DVDs to her house.
And Hulu existed, but Hulu had yet to be purchased by Disney. Like Hulu was still like a bit more illicit, I think. And so anyway, all to say, like, this is back in the days when content was not just at your fingertips whenever you wanted it. And little known fact, I was in a sorority in college, Pi Beta Phi, where for like half of a year.
But for half of a year.
In that half of a year.
Did they kick you out? What happened?
Well, I didn't like it. It like wasn't for me.
Oh, okay.
I was too much of a pick you. Me girl. I was too much of a pick me girl. I was like, I don't need this in my life.
I mean, it was the era of the pick me girl. Like,
yeah,
the
manic, I was like,
pixie dream girl, all
holy,
of it.
Like Zoe Deschanel-ing, like new girling it up. Yeah. And I was like, yep. I'm cooler than this. Narrator, she was not cooler than this. But anyway, so I know this is a long-winded answer, but you asked me our relationship with this season. So even though I was only in the sorority for about half a year, like in change, I managed to make my housing like in the sorority house. So I was living in the sorority house and there was one television and it was sort of like whatever we were watching that night, you sort of had to like petition to watch the show because it would be like multiple girls watching the show at the same time. So Bachelor Mondays were a big deal, which was so much fun. It was just like, it was a gathering moment. And I remember like making an impassioned plea to watch Top Chef in the sorority house. And I was very quickly shot down. Nobody wanted to watch Top Chef.
That is crazy to me.
Crazy.
And so you know, all those assholes like definitely watched it during COVID, like me.
Yeah. Assholes.
Assholes.
That's why I left the sorority, actually, because they didn't want to watch Top Chef with me. Anyway, so I had to go to my friend's house off campus who had cable and watch Top Very Chef cool. there. So that's my relationship to this season.
Okay. Mine's a lot shorter. Mine was – this was like – well, this was the first season of Top Chef. I take that back. Actually, season 6 was the first season I ever watched of Top Chef, which we covered.
So shout good. Out.
Go back and listen. Season 10 was the second. And I don't know if it's recency bias. 100% could be. These are two of the most elite seasons of Top Chef.
Elite. Like,
by a lot.
I mean, you've got a lot of all-stars coming out of these seasons.
A lot of ASs. Okay, Nancy. So now that we have that covered, can we talk amuse-bouche reaction before we get into the fun of this episode? Lay it on me.
I want you to give your amuse-bouche. I feel like you always give me
– wow.
You always give me the opportunity to speak first, and I, as we round the corner on 2025, would like to give you the stage a bit more.
I really appreciate that. I wasn't expecting that. Okay, I think I said a lot of this, but I love, love, love this season opener. God, I love it. Also, just knowing – I love it for the cast. We have a lot of, like, personality reality TV hires in this one. We've got Carla. We've got Stefan. We've got just Josh. We've got CJ, Josie, holy shit. There's a lot packed in here. It's kind of ironic that the people who go the furthest are sort of like the quietest. I don't know if it's ironic. It's just sort of like an interesting observation I made having watched some of these earlier eps. I 100% to your kind of like noting the Seattle setting, I think Seattle is the perfect Top Chef city. You have like great local fare. It's a place that I personally never been, so it's always like fun to watch and learn something new about a new city. So I'm so in it. We have all these like, you know, personalities, like this like quadrant of personalities, which is like always really fun to like hang out in that. So what about you? Let me throw it back.
So amuse-bouche reaction to the season, or I'm just going to give to the season opener.
Yeah, to the opener.
I loved this because something that is missing in Top Chef, inherent to the fact that it is a cooking competition, is that these people are coming from like restaurant backgrounds. Like they are professional chefs, don't just like make a dish and then have it exist in the ether. Like there's always a receiving end to their food. And so I really liked that you saw them in the context of a restaurant kitchen like right out of the gate. I just thought that was fun. You, ironically, you very rarely see Top Chef happen in a restaurant. It's usually in the Great Top Chef kitchen, unless it's like some special kitchen that they get to cook in.
Yeah.
But all to say, I just really liked situating them in an environment that they all probably felt pretty comfortable in. And as a result, we're like, you know, of course, incredibly nervous, but put to the test and hopefully set up to succeed. So I just thought, and I also appreciate, we've always said this, but Top Chef is a show that has very genuinely evolved with the times.
Yeah.
And my bet is they were like, okay, we're 10 seasons. That's a huge accomplishment. This show started in 2002. Like, that's insane. And we're in 2012. I have, you know, been watching this show since I was like 8 years old at this point. And like, they probably sat there and they're like, how can we make it different? How can we keep it interesting?
Yeah.
How can we, you know, adapt to this moment that we're in? And I think they did a great job by being like, you know what, let's mix up this first challenge. Let's figure out new ways to inject life into this thing that's 10 years old, which is like, this has to be one of the longest running shows on TV at this point.
Yeah. I mean, The Simpsons and Law and Order SVU are maybe like the only others.
But I'll just say, it's just like, I appreciate that they are always injecting new life into the formula.
Love that. So let's talk about this formula, this episode. So the challenge, as we came to interpret fairly quickly, was that the chefs have actually not made it to Top Chef yet. This is almost like a pre-elimination.
It's like making
challenge.
It to Hollywood.
Yes, they got to make it to Hollywood first. They need to pass Simon Cowell. Who would be the Simon Cowell? Probably Tom Colicchio, I guess. Or Hugh Atchison. Wolfgang Puck is definitely Paula Abdul.
Wolfgang Puck is Paula Abdul. They are spirit animals.
And then Emeril is, what's his name? Oh my God, I just had it. And it
Randy
left
Jackson.
Me. Randy Jackson, yes.
Yes. I think.
Just chill.
Yeah, I think Tom is definitely the Simon, but Tom is so much better than Simon Cowell.
I know. It's not fair. Tom is
a revel in being mean. He just has high standards.
Completely agree. Okay, I'm like taking us way off course. So the chefs, two. Get through to Top Chef, need to compete in one sort of like pre-challenge. They're divided into four groups. One of those groups goes with Wolfgang Puck. They are asked to make an omelet. The other group goes to Emeril Lagasse. Their challenge, make a soup.
Soup.
Soup. So Hugh Atchison, the request is to make a salad. And lastly, to Tom Colicchio, they're to work on the line at his restaurant, Kraft. So Nancy, before we get into kind of like individual kitchens here, high level, who do you think had it the easiest?
I will be honest. This might be a surprise. I think Tom's group had it the easiest because they didn't have to produce a plate of food. I mean, they eventually did, but they had like a whole support system of a kitchen around them and an environment that they're way more familiar with than competition cooking. So I think like they were being held to a standard that is very ordinary for them. Or it's familiar, not ordinary.
Yeah. It was sort of like just pure staging. It wasn't exactly. There was no creativity to it, I don't think.
Exactly.
In the way that the others. I completely agree. Would you have changed that response if I would have asked which judge you would have preferred to cook under?
Yes. Wolfgang Puck, baby.
Yeah, me too.
I will say, like, okay, this is not to throw shade, and I know that we really try to not do this on this podcast, but, like, I didn't think those omelets looked particularly good on any of them. Like,
no.
They've done the omelet test in the past where it's like you have 5 minutes to make a perfect omelet, and, like, that's the quick fire, and it's, like, the classic French omelet. Some of those omelets looked like they were coming out of City Diner on 90th and Broadway. Like,
Yeah.
I was really not impressed with the finesse and care that went into the omelets for the level of chef that was there.
I completely agree. Let's put a pin in that until we get there because then we can kind of like look at it with more of a fine-tooth comb.
To answer your question, I'd want to cook for Wolfgang Puck because he's just such a fun guy. But I also think that he is – I'm not going to say like the easiest judge, but he sees his default – he's innocent until proven guilty. Like default is to see potential in everyone, which I so appreciate that type of leadership style.
Yes.
And I think like unless you royally fucked it up, like he was going to give you a chance.
Yeah. He gives the – and I would say this for Emeralds also. Like they want you to succeed.
Yeah.
They want you to succeed. Did you happen to watch The Last Holiday this holiday season starring Wolfgang Puck?
The Last Holiday, that's one with Queen Latifah.
Yeah, where she also is under Wolfgang Puck's tutelage.
Tutelage. I didn't watch The Last Holiday this past Christmas. I watched The Holiday with you. I know to what you refer.
Good. Okay. Well, so with that being said, let's back up to our New Orleanian, our very own Emeril Lagasse. So this group, was asked to make soup. Bam. We had Tina, Jeffrey, Josh, Stephanie, and our very own Kristen Kish. Nancy, what would we do if we went on to this show and only one of us could move? Only one of us ended up moving
on. I was thinking about that. I mean, I'd be really happy for you. Like, I really, really would. But I'd be seething with jealousy.
I would just be like, this sucks. Like, you would just be, it wouldn't even be that I was upset that you went on at all. It would be like, I can't believe I was so close to competing with my friend and I fucked it up because of like some simple thing. So power, like just more power to Stephanie because.
Yeah, that.
And they've come so far. Like we've seen her now, BTS on Top Chef. So she's doing fine. She comes back in the Top Chef universe. But like in that moment, I would have been like fully.
Heartbroken. I think. From both, like, you've got the survivor's guilt of Kristen Kish, and then you've got the, like, the disappointment of Steph.
Yeah.
Devastating. That was really devastating. But I think they both handled it with pride. But before we even get to that, let's talk about what these chefs made. So in the soup kitchen, we had Tina made a seafood and chorizo soup. Jeffrey made a gazpacho with scallops. Josh made a coconut corn soup with mussels and lime. Steph made cauliflower soup with lobster and peas. Kristen made an English pea broth, poached lemon peel, and scallop.
Mm. I love that the drama here was like, if he serves that gazpacho to me and it's not cold. It was so threatening.
It was.
Like, put it in that shallow-ass pan. I was like, is that going to taste like metal, like pan? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that was crazy. I will say, though, that like lukewarm gazpacho is gross.
Yeah, yeah.
I love gazpacho.
You said it.
2024 was the summer of gazpacho for me. I was churning out gazpacho in my kitchen like once a week.
I don't think I've ever made one.
But
I like cold things.
Yeah, so I would say that of these soups, the gazpacho would be the one I want to eat the most.
You know what's interesting? I actually would have gone with Kristen's, the English pea broth and scallop.
That's nice.
You could already tell in this challenge how refined her sensibilities are, which is really impressive.
I was going to say first impressions is candidly, I think that, and my memory of her this season, I've watched episode one, but I do think that the style of food that Kristen makes is not my preferred style. Like it's a bit, as you say, it is refined. Personally, I think I found it a bit boring. But there is no doubt as to whether or not it's excellent.
Right.
But in this moment, and we kind of learned this in season 21 when she, like in episode one, she's like, who here's an executive chef? Who here's won an award? And she said, when I was on Top Chef in your shoes, I had one sous chef job. That was all I had. And so it's really interesting to think about the stage in the career, in their careers. I mean, some of them definitely have more accolades than Kristen did at this point in time. Kristen's obviously a beast, but, you know, she's young and she's impressionable and she was in these prestigious kitchens that were cooking this really high fidelity or like, you know, high end cuisine.
Right,
and that's
right.
What she's super influenced by. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting to see her growth over the past 10 years and like what she's into and what she's become.
Completely agree. You know, we didn't maybe say this specifically as far as like which challenge we would most want to take on. Mm-hmm. I actually think I would want to take soup.
Really?
I like making soup. I think it's easy to like get – it's easy to play with flavors. It's kind of easy to cover up mistakes too. It's not like – doesn't need to be like very technical. I guess you can take it in a technical place. I wouldn't sweat that with someone like Emerald though. Like I think it's got to be flavor first. But – timing, I forget how much time they have for the soup. I did think it was like crazy not to jump ahead of the Hugh Atchison salad challenge, but I was like, yo, they had 45 fucking minutes to make a salad. What?
Yeah, I would say that personally, I would probably like to do the salad the most because I'm a big salad girly. Like day at noon, you can catch me with a giant bowl of salad. I just love a big salad. And I'm not saying like, I'm not a wings girl with the body of a salad girl. I'm definitely a salad girl with the body of a wings girl. But
It just caught up to me what you were saying. I'm like reading my notes about like what to say next.
You're okay. Like, yes, yes, yes.
Yes, girl. You just define yourself to a T. No feedback.
I just love a big salad. Like salad dressings can get so interesting and fun.
I completely agree. And throw some salad.
I really liked that challenge. But yeah, okay. Soup challenge. So just to summarize, we have Kristen, Josh, and Jeffrey going through the gazpacho, the coconut and corn soup with mussels and lime, and Kristen's English pea make it through. Emeril seemed really impressed by all of them. Unfortunately, yep. It means that Tina's seafood and chorizo soup and Stephanie's cauliflower soup with lobster and peas are out of there.
Out of here. Out of the soup, into the fryer. So let's move on to our very own, well, I don't know what very own means. We really like Wolfgang Puck. Let's talk about him now.
He's just such a silly judge. Like he makes
so silly. And it like permeated the whole kitchen. It was frenetic. So,
yes.
And it's very likely due to the people that were in this room. So let's talk through that. We have Carla Pellegrino. Let's come back to her. Eliza Gavin, Tyler Ward, Chrissy Kamba, Daniel O'Brien, and Kuniko Yagi. So we had actually one more chef in this group than we did in the soup group. Wawa Wiwa, Carla, the ex-wife of the owner of Rao's, or like Rao himself.
That is such a flex. For those who don't know, Rao's, I mean, you've probably seen their tomato sauce on the shelves. Personally, it's the tomato sauce I was raised on. Like, it's not tomato sauce if it's not Rao's. I think it's like the best jarred tomato sauce out there. But Rao's is a storied restaurant in New York City. It is like the hardest table to get because you actually can't make reservations. You need to like own a table, and you get to like your table ownership is like for certain nights of the month. I think it is like you have to be invited to eat there essentially. And it's just like super iconic. There is one in Vegas now. Like I do think the brand has been diluted a bit, but the one in New York is iconic. I don't even know how you even get into the realm of receiving an invitation to eat there. Like that is a life goal of mine. But all to say that she is the wife of that man. First off, it means she's seen some shit, to say the least. Like part of what's so cool about Rao's is that it's so secretive. Like there are stories of like what goes down in there. Like people are just getting drunk till like 5 a.m. and it's like mayors, politicians, celebrities, like all of the glamour of New York Italian dining in this one restaurant. And so she's definitely seen some shit, but it's also just so cool. Like that.
It's so cool. And she lives up to it in terms of like what we see on TV. Like she is I'm just so glad she's here. Like classic reality TV hire, personality hire, that is.
Speaking of classic reality TV, something that we come across almost instantaneously is very overt racism.
You did catch that. Group. What the fuck?
Okay.
I was like, they let that ride? What the fuck?
Spoiler alert, Daniel O'Brien is eliminated, which like, thank God. And he's also the only one to be eliminated, which like, sucks. I hope is the nice knife twist that he deserves, because straight out of the gate, he is racist. He refers to Kuniko, who's Japanese, as origami.
I had to go and look up her last name and like confirm that that was not her surname. I was like, is he like calling her? I was like,
I can't believe that he just said that. Let's that rip, like episode one. And the thing is, like, I think that even in 2012, that was not wild. Okay. Like in 2006 or 2009, whenever season 6 was, like, I'm not saying that it was acceptable, but the wave of like political correctness that and the world that we currently live in was like not even a glint in anyone's eye.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By 2012, it was widely agreed that speaking like this was unacceptable. And especially to do it on national TV, horrifying. But then he does it again.
Yeah. Which is why I thought it was like legitimately up some part of her name, because I was like, there's no way he made this joke twice.
On national television.
Bad. joke is not the right word. There's no way he said that twice.
Insane. And like the indignity of her having to like stand next to him while he said it. Like I just was looking at her and I was like, this girl fucking rocks. And like yeah, has probably had to put up. But imagine like if that's what he's willing to say on TV, imagine the shit that gets said
for
to her.
Sure.
Like just in kitchens. You know, like it just was horrifying to see the ease with which that just like.
I mean, she was an executive chef at where was she at during this? I'll look it up in LA, but yeah, she was big moves. But all right, yeah. So this dude sucks ass. But let's talk who did make it through Wolfgang's kitchen. So we had Carla, who did an arugula salad, mushrooms, and zucchini. Mm-hmm. Eliza did steak and eggs with a very strong suggestion by Wolfgang, who was like, I think you should make steak. And she was like, okay, I guess I'm making steak. Tyler made a shallot, leeks, bacon, red pepper, and asparagus omelet. Kuniko made a chamomile milk kale tomato omelet.
That didn't sound good to me.
It didn't, and which means it probably was awesome. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so weird. I'm like, I can't even conceptualize how an egg could taste like these things, but I would bet $1 million that it probably was fire.
Yep.
Daniel did a mushroom, shallot, garlic, and bacon. Boo, boring, safe.
And then Chrissy did lobster, bacon, fennel, potatoes. Yeah, all by the way, bacon counter already through the roof this episode.
Bacon. Bacon's got to go on the counter for season 10 then.
Yeah. But yeah, all of the omelets in general didn't present as
no,
very
they all looked fried. I'm like, dude, have you guys ever made fucking eggs? Like it seemed like the first time these people made eggs.
They were like burned in a lot of places.
It was not it did not look good. And I can guarantee you I make a better omelet than what I saw on this show. It's not hard. I think the problem is that they weren't working with stainless steel or excuse me, nonstick pans. Like they were working
with, but
like,
I don't think that matters. I was surprised that none of them went for a classic French omelet.
Same.
Like that to me, if you can knock that out perfectly, you're in.
I don't know where they all like overdid it. Like it was all overcooked. Carla's looked horrible. And like she owned up to him. It was like, oh, I'm covering it because it looks so bad. I'm like, now it just looks bad and covered. Like,
yes. Which I hope that the real reason Danny O'Brien didn't make it is because he was racist. But you have to wonder how bad his was.
Yeah. For like everybody else's like shit eggs through. To make it. Yeah. I don't know. So. Ugh. I did have a good time aside from like him being gross. I did have a fun time in that kitchen between like Carla. Basically, Carla is Carla. And then you have Tyler who's just like so squishy, warm.
Yes.
And I just feel like he's like, I just want to do well. But he's like a huge guy. So it's always funny when that happens.
Exactly. And then you got Wolfgang who's just
and you got Wolfgang,
such
yeah.
a joy to be around. I will say that I was a bit confused when I learned that these people were not the judges for the season. I was like, so hyped that we were going to get to spend a whole season with Wolfgang. I know that they come back, but yeah. I just at the start, there was a moment where I was like, am I going to get to spend 17 episodes with Wolfgang?
Oh my God,
Puck?
I know.
Like, how
I
much
know.
Fun would that be? But alas, we only get him a few times.
Alas, alas.
Okay, let's move on to Hugh Atchison's kitchen in Atlanta, Georgia.
I wanted to say one thing on Hugh Atchison.
Please.
The first time that I watched this season during COVID, I remember thinking, God, this guy is such an asshole. And on rewatch, I'm like, am I like in my Hugh Atchison era right now? I actually really kind of vibed with his energy in this challenge.
I like his energy too.
He just was so no nonsense and was like, I don't know. Like, don't ask me dumb questions. Like, he just was so – and not – it didn't seem rude to me now. It seemed like somebody who was tired of being asked the same things or, like, tired of being asked stupid questions. And, you know, he's got this, like, face that's, like, extremely expressive. And he, like, uses it quite effectively, I think, sometimes. But I don't know. I came away thinking, like, oh, I like this guy now and I didn't like him before at all.
Yeah, that's fair. I've never really – thought of him as an asshole, but he's definitely a tough critic. Like, he's not warm and fuzzy the way Emeril or Wolfgang is.
Yeah,
but I think
when you
mean,
hold him up to those guys, it's yeah, for sure.
I've never thought that he was mean. I've just thought that he's incredibly objective.
Yeah.
And like not emotive at all.
He's very deadpan in his delivery, but his face is the opposite. Like all of his emotion comes from his facial expressions. Yep. Nothing comes from like his vocal delivery.
Yes. And also like verbal. He is the inverse of Wolfgang and Emeril, who are innocent until proven guilty. He's like, impress me.
Yeah.
You're starting
at
zero, get to 100.
Yep.
Whereas with Wolfgang and Emeril, you start at 100 and you get knocked down for mistakes. So, you know, it's just like a different energy and a different type of performance.
Completely agree.
That's required. Okay, so let's talk about the people in this kitchen. So we have Sheldon, Brooke, Bart, Gina, and Danielle. That's how we spell her. That's how we pronounce her name. It's phonetic. Okay, first off, we just got to say, holy shit, Brooke Williamson is on our screens. She is like just – she has entered the Top Chef cinematic universe, and this is the beginning of an insane fucking career for her.
Yeah.
We are in the presence of greatness in this moment, and it's just like so cool to see her origin on the show, like her very first thing.
Yes.
A salad.
A salad. A delicious-looking salad. Let's talk about what everybody made. So Brooke, lobster with beets and asparagus – Sheldon, fried Brussels sprouts, burnt orange vinaigrette. Bart, kale salad, Brussels sprouts, watercress, lemon vinaigrette.
Yum.
Gina, yum. Love watercress. Gina had a grilled vegetable salad. Also suffered from a bit of like, what was she like? She is a catering cook.
Yeah.
Or like has her own like whatever. There's always like a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
And then lastly, Danielle, watermelon with charred tomato vinaigrette.
Yeah.
I now own two cookbooks from two of these chefs, Sheldon and Brooke. Brooke, whose latest cookbook, first cookbook
Sun-Kissed Cooking,
in November. Wow, Sheldon's sounded delicious to me.
So good.
I love Sheldon's energy. It's such a necessary energy in this season of like Stefan's and Josie's. It's like, okay, bring us back to center, my Hawaiian
guy. Not only does Sheldon bring us back to center, he also is so secure in his identity.
Totally.
He does not feel the need to like cook for what the judges want.
Mm-hmm.
I know we haven't watched the whole season, but he rarely is like, what do they think of me? Am I doing okay? He's just like, this is my food.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
1,000%. I'm going to serve it to you. And it's like, it is something that I imagine as a competitor like a Stefan is so intimidating. Like to just be that confident and secure in yourself in the Top Chef kitchen is probably the most intimidating thing you could bring to this competition.
Yeah.
Like not questioning yourself is going to get you so far in Top Chef. Whereas you see a lot of people just implode on like, is this what they want? Did I do this right? Do they like this cut or that cut? And Sheldon's just like, this is how I prepare it at home.
Yeah. And I'm trying to really remember, and I'm not going to put words in my own mouth. I want to pay attention to kind of like how that works as far as like group alchemy is concerned.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is getting into episode two. I know you and I both have watched ahead a little bit. There, you start to see when you get into the group things, people that kind of like pull punches or like don't speak up. So I forget where he fell on that spectrum, but like completely agree that in a solo capacity, he's like, he knows his flavors.
Yeah. And he's just like, he is a port in a storm. He's
so
confident and smooth sailing.
On a sort of like other end of that, we have Bart.
Yeah.
Very stuffy, very like old school. Yeah. We get a little hint of that this episode.
Yep.
I mean, his sounded amazing, like, but also watercress is like a little bit like that.
I do love a lemon vinaigrette, like, ooh, punchy, delicious. I bet there was some like fresh ground black pepper
probably
in there
soy
too.
Good.
Soy good. But yeah, so then we have Brooke, who is similarly like super confident and intimidating. She's just like, yep, this is what I do.
Yeah. And not like a blowhard, like just quiet, confident.
Exactly. And then we have like two eager beavers in the form of Gina and Danielle.
Gina was really feeling herself.
Yeah.
Feeling herself Friday.
And then unfortunately, she is the only one who doesn't get the coat.
Yeah. But it was our loss.
Alas, you know, we may never get to see her again. And I do think that Danielle, like watermelon with a charred tomato vinaigrette sounds divine.
Agree.
It's cool because we're seeing like some trend. Of course, bacon on everything is sort of a joke of this era, but we are starting to see more contemporary food trends,
mm-hmm.
like in this season, that like are still with us today. And like a charred tomato vinaigrette is exactly that. Like that's very much the palate of the mid-2000s as opposed to like the early aughts.
Yep. Ooh, baby, I love you. Wee. Okay. Last but not least, we got ahead to the craft kitchen with Tom Colicchio. As you mentioned earlier in the ep, Nancy, kind of a different challenge in here. It's really just like working the line, doing different things, not even people doing the same thing. Everybody's like kind of doing something different. I'd be curious to know, you know, if there was any like foresight on that, like maybe, oh, we know this person was like weak.
I think there definitely was. Everyone seemed to be like, again, I actually think that Tom is of the like setting you up to succeed category. And in that way, he is not Simon Cowell. But Tom is in the Hugh Atchison territory of like very objective and respects craft, above all else, and like composure in the kitchen. And so I do think that like he gave them all tasks that they should be naturally inclined to. Like he gave the person who butchers a butchering task. Mm-hmm, he gave the woman who like is comfortable with pasta a pasta task. Like he wasn't.
That's true.
He wasn't giving anyone like something totally out of their comfort zone to see how they adapt.
So run us through what everybody was doing.
Don't mind if I do. Okay, so in the craft kitchen, we have Lizzie stuffing and shaping tortellini. We have Anthony breaking down ducks. We have John filleting and portioning a salmon. Micah filleting a black bass, and Jarrell butchering whole chickens. And again, these are like really basic skills. I mean, Tom is the king of the mise en place relay. We like this is a mise en place challenge. Like Tom really likes to see not only that you can create good dishes, but that you understand the holistic toolkit of being a chef.
I will say that like – so one thing that we quickly hear as Tom is like floating around that people are failing. One thing – and it was it Jarrell or Anthony who – basically they started to break down the protein.
Jarrell.
And yeah, and Tom was like, why did you do that before asking me how I wanted it like broken down? I also was just like breaking it down incorrectly, like removing the bone. I have to say of everything that these people had to make today, like breaking down butchering a whole chicken seems to be the easiest.
Yeah, it requires by no far. Cooking.
Yeah, by far. Like it's literally
even
like
I know how to break down a chicken.
Yeah. Like so to me that was pretty shocking. And he also was one of the two people that didn't advance. Like he did that poorly. And the other person who didn't was also breaking down a protein.
Yep.
Anthony breaking down duck.
Yep.
We did see a little bit of John. John actually got his apron first and early. And there was a little bit of confusion like, oh, was he actually so bad he got kicked out of the kitchen? But
this was definitely a production trick. Like every single one of these kitchens, I think with the exception of Wolfgang actually – did the trick of like, good, here's your apron.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, well, he already judged me.
I feel like Wolfgang like missed the
Wolfgang's gonna do whatever
they were like talking about. Yeah. They were like, you know, like you should probably like get rid of two or three people. And like he just sent home these like fried ass like omelets, was like, yeah, good enough. Like I think he missed whatever call there was.
No. But so I think with Tom. So interestingly, the two people who got sent home are the two people who didn't ask clarifying questions. And I think that like Tom, you and I have seen him talk in person. We've also like watched his entire body of work now over the years. And like and this goes with Sheldon as well. Like there's a real security in knowing what you know and knowing what you don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that Tom intentionally gave people a task with incomplete information to see if people were going to have the humility and vulnerability to ask the follow-up question.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, it reminded me a lot, and I won't go on for too long, but, like, in business school when you have to do case interviews and, like, the interviewer has a set of, like, facts that you have to prompt them for. So, like, they'll give you a prompt, and then you have to ask clarifying questions, and they possess more information to help you accomplish the task. And if you don't know the right questions to ask, then you don't get complete information. And this was essentially the same thing. It was like,
yeah,
do you possess enough self-awareness to know the limits of your knowledge?
Yeah. And are you comfortable enough seeking, like, I have to imagine that in this context, people may have second guessed what maybe would traditionally not have been second guessed as far as exactly. asking for help. Maybe I'm thinking, oh, I should know this, so I need to just do exactly. what
like,
I think.
Is it bravado? Is it yeah. whatever?
Which sucked. And but at the same time, like, this kitchen was the closest to just their normal job.
Jobs. Yeah.
And of all the kitchens, personally, like, this was also the one that I would be the most embarrassed to get sent home from because for that reason. Like, you weren't actually needing – in all the other ones, you could play – you know, it wasn't to their taste or I ran out of time. Like, there is a right way to do these things in this kitchen, and yep. to fail that has to suck extra. So sorry yep. about that, guys.
And you also saw that he really liked – who is it who just, like, jumped on the line? Micah. Like, Micah yeah. didn't do super well – filleting the salmon. Like yeah. you saw Tom visibly grimace while he was doing it. But then you saw that he like got into the line and was like conversing with the people and showed yeah. that he was at ease and understood how to work in this environment, which in the end gave him a pass to go to Hollywood,
yeah.
to
yeah.
Seattle. Like, and I think that that's what I mean by like, Tom wants people to succeed. He is going to give people chances to succeed. He is going to put them in positions to succeed. And he's willing to yeah. try a few different pieces of the puzzle to see what fits.
Yep.
But if essentially it's like, it's yours to lose in Tom's kitchen. Like, he is going to give you all the resources you possibly need, including him. Like, ask yeah. him the question. And if for whatever reason, either it's pride or nerves or insecurity, you don't use those resources, he's like, you're not going to make it because you're not a resourceful chef.
Yeah, yeah. The resourcefulness like very much resonates. Yeah. So that rounds things out. How many chefs then do we have in total moving on? We've got three from three from Tom's kitchen. We have yep. another three from Emeralds.
So it's six. Then we have one, two, three,
we've got
four,
five from Wolfgang. Classic. So that's Classics, 11. And then we have four from Hughes. So that's 16 chefs.
Nope, that's 15.
Sorry, 15 chefs.
Yeah, so we've got 15.
That's a large cast.
But that's the normal number going into the season. I actually think sometimes it's 16, but then mm-hmm. it makes sense that it's 15 because in episode one, someone gets eliminated. Traditionally.
Yep.
So we've got the normal number of chefs, but don't hold your breath because there's a big twist in episode two. We might get some more people in the party, which we've already talked about. But we'll talk about that in next week's episode. Okay, also in next week's episode, we'll do some of our traditional episode one things like predictions for the season. We'll talk about counters for the season. And then what else do we normally end our episodes with?
We got to do our judges table.
Judgy table.
Yes. We'll do Would You Eat That once we don't eliminate yeah. five people at once. But yes, our judgy table, our first of this season, season 10.
Okay, I need to think of mine.
I have one ready to rock. Okay. It's going to be a little on the nose, like based on the conversation today, but like it needs to be said and I'll say it.
Okay, let me get my stopwatch going. Bits, your judgy table starts now.
Tom's challenge being too different from the other three challenges. I think that was a little unfair. I think like he took it in a direction that was actually like didn't keep a very even there wasn't an even keel with all of the three others. Like in all the three other kitchens, it's like create a dish from scratch. I want it to be like X dish, whatever. And in Tom's, it was like work in my restaurant and like prepare some food. And so I won't get more into it. That's like kind of the end of it. But I do not think these things are equal. I do not think like X equals Y in this case. I actually, you know, I actually think, as I mentioned, that the people in Tom's kitchen kind of had it easier. I would say maybe the handicap is, but you have to serve for Tom Colicchio, who's the head judge of the whole show. So maybe it all washes out, but I didn't like that. It felt so distinct and I would have preferred them to say like everybody has to make like a ravioli.
Yep.
That's my judgy table.
Love it. I agree. Yeah. A stuffed pasta. That's Gail's. We love it. This is also beautiful foreshadowing to season 21, where we had a similar setup for the challenge, which was awesome.
Yeah, as I was griping, I was like, well, wait, why have I seen this? And like teaser, we get this a little bit, a few episodes into the season where we have a bit of a like Tom-inspired, Emerald-inspired. But okay, Nancy, let's hear your judgy table.
Okay, here's my judgy table starting now. Omelets should be trifold, not half fold.
Mm-hmm.
A half folded omelet is literally just like four eggs. It is industrial paving material. I have never had a bifolded omelet that was any good. Do not fucking come for me on this one. A trifold has a nice soft center. Everything is melted. Mm-hmm. It's also like omelets should not have more than two eggs. That's another fucking thing. Like omelets are supposed to be clean, easy, delicious. Not these fucking monstrosities of the mid-2000s where you're going to like get these insane brunches with like fried chicken on top of this and that and the other thing. Like give me a clean omelet and shut the fuck up for the rest of breakfast. It doesn't need to be like peppers and mushrooms and onions and spinach and feta and cheddar and scallions and asparagus. Like no, an omelet needs to be clean. I don't want any of the bullshit that I saw in this episode. I would not eat a single one of those. The end.
Amen to that, dude. That was a great one. I completely agree on the trifold, and I completely agree on like omelet bullshit. I'm gonna be honest, I never order omelets out because of that. Like
I never order omelets out because of that.
They're always bad. Like they're always going to not be good. They're always going to be overcooked. And like, why do I have to do all this work of picking what to put in it? Like it's annoying. Right? Like ham cubes.
Oh, gross.
Actually, I kind of do like ham cubes.
Of
I
course
just like
you
hams.
Do. Of course yeah, you do. Your fucking like Lebanon bologna or whatever that shit is.
Lebanon.
What is it?
Pronounce it Lebanon.
What is it?
I mean like the country, but Lebanon. It's just like the regional pronunciation.
But what's the meat?
It's Lebanon bologna. Yeah,
Lebanon
you're right.
Bologna. Okay, yeah. See? So
Lebanon bologna.
Sorry that my New York accent offended you.
The Lebanon bologna is like Diana's bologna. bologna, excuse
truly,
me.
Truly, so growing up, my dad would always make omelets and my dad makes a trifold. And I had never had a non-trifold omelet until I like, I guess, was in my teenage years and we started going to diners in New York City.
Yeah, it's like.
And they're gross.
It's like I have to put all this shit in my omelet so I can only
There's
fold it
so
once.
There's so much
yeah.
of it. They're like six eggs. Oh, yeah, my God. It's, so it's gross, real dude. Gaston bullshit. I'm not into it.
It is some Gaston bullshit.
Diner omelets are Gaston coated.
Amazing. Well, Nancy, oh, my goodness. It is such a joy to be back. Oh! Episode one in the books. Yeah, just some quick housekeeping.
Yes.
For the month of January, we are assuming that we have this Top Chef season 22 landing sometime end of March. So we're going to be front loading a lot of our recap episodes the month of January. Mm-hmm. Probably two eps every Thursday, but you'll see. You'll get what you get.
We will also have every so often our famous second helping episodes, which we normally do to recap Last Chance Kitchen, and we also use for interviews. And I know that we mentioned it a bit at the top of the episode, but we have locked and loaded a roster of incredible chefs we are speaking to for season 10. I keep texting Bits like, I'm so proud of us. We have somehow booked like some of the biggest names in the Top Chef universe, starting with next week on Monday, you will hear an episode, an interview with Brooke Williamson herself. Oh my God. It's surreal.
It was honestly surreal the whole time talking to her. It was a really fun episode. We talk a lot about her new cookbook, which we have purchased, and it is awesome. She has a really thoughtful foreword in the front too, so definitely check that out. But yes, it's going to be an amazing season. We have like three or four other incredible guests. We're going to kind of like keep it a surprise for now. But we've got some contenders from this season, from past seasons, from future seasons. Ooh. Maybe the most future of them all. But that's it. Nancy, any other like thoughts for the people?
No, I'm just so excited to kick it off. Everyone, okay. So tune in on Monday to listen to Brooke Williamson. It's going to be incredible. And otherwise, get excited. Season 10.
Woo! See you next time. Bye.